appreciate the reading of that chapter. I couldn't have done as good, I don't believe. But that's going to introduce our subject tonight as we talk about the story of Ruth. I appreciate your being here, and I hope that the time will be profitable. And since all Scripture is profitable and we're studying from the Scriptures, I believe that it will be. The little book of Ruth in the Old Testament has been described as one of the most beautiful short stories ever written. It's just kind of squeezed in, sandwiched in between the books of Judges and 1 Samuel, but it is a jewel that we find there. Benjamin Franklin is said to have told the story to a group of skeptics who thought that it ought to be put into print until they found out it was in the Bible. And it is unquestionably true that this book of the Bible is a classic, ageless story of love and devotion. And as you reflect upon the story of Ruth, don't forget that this is a story about real people who lived in a geographical place at a particular time in history and who actually had these experiences that we're going to learn about tonight. That the book of Ruth is a true story is clear, I believe, from the very first verse. In the way it begins, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. So that puts it in a particular time in history. That there was a famine in the land, and it deals with a certain man and a certain family by name, specific people involved. Another way I believe we know that it is a true story is because of the way the book ends. It ends with a portion of a genealogy over in chapter 4. And in verse 17, where it talks about the son that was born to Naomi, actually a grandson, they called his name Obed. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. Again, dealing with specific people and a particular person at a particular place in a genealogy. And another way I believe we can know that it's a true story, dealing with an actual event, actual events, is the fact that the New Testament identifies Ruth as an ancestor of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. Tomorrow night we're going to be talking about that passage. So the book of Ruth is a story about real people, and it's included in the Bible because it's inspired, and it has benefit for us today. All Scripture is inspired of God and is profitable. Whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. Romans 15 and verse 4. So you've heard the first chapter read. We're going to read the whole book of Ruth tonight. I won't reread the first chapter. But some of the things as we look at this chapter, I want to suggest three lessons that we learn from this first chapter of the book of Ruth. The first one is, the kind of faith that eventually triumphs is a faith that does not falter when it's faced with sorrow or loss or hardship. Naomi lost her husband, and she lost both of her sons as well, and her loss included poverty and destitution. Apparently there weren't any such things as insurance policies and things of that kind at that time. Furthermore, Naomi believed that God caused her loss. You may notice that she said that God had caused it in verse 13 and then again in verses 20 and 21. I don't know if God caused her to lose her husband. I doubt that he did, and her two sons. But it's certainly true that God allowed it to happen. God allows a lot of things that he doesn't approve. He's given us freedom of choice, and a lot of times calamities come as a result of men making the wrong choice. And the only other alternative would be if God had made us as robots with no choice, or as computers that are programmed to act a certain way. We have a choice, and along with that ability to choose come hardships. But now also I want to point out to you that in spite of the suffering of such a terrible loss that she suffered, and thinking that it was caused by God, she still retained faith in God. Her faith in God did not fail, according to verse 8, where she said to her daughters-in-law, "Go and return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you." So she's asking a blessing upon them. And furthermore, Ruth herself also refused to let her misfortune keep her from serving the Lord. She had lost a husband as well as a homeland. So, first of all, it really is possible to have the kind of faith that cannot be swallowed up by sorrow or by loss or by hardship. And secondly, this is the kind of faith that eventually triumphs in the end. Now, the second lesson we learn from this first chapter in Ruth is that it's possible to rise above the disadvantages and the handicaps of growing up in a bad environment. Where did Ruth grow up? Well, she grew up in the midst of Moabite idolatry. She was from the land of Moab, we learned there in verse 15. But she overcame it and she developed a steadfast faith in God, according to verse 12 in the next chapter. And she overcame it. In fact, Ruth has sometimes been called the Mary of the Old Testament. Her example teaches us that we can rise above a bad background and a bad environment or a bad upbringing. She could have gone ahead and lived as an idolater would have lived, but she rose above that. Now then, if you were not raised in a Christian home, that doesn't mean that you can't rise above your background if you want to. Remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 about the kind of lives the Corinthians lived? Nearly every immoral thing imaginable they had committed. He said, such were some of you, but ye were washed. They rose above their background. They grew up in an idolatrous society where every form of immorality was practiced, sometimes even religiously. And if you were raised right, but you turned your back on God and you wasted years in unfaithfulness, you can overcome that if you decide that you really want to. Ruth decided that she really wanted to overcome her environment and the religion that she grew up in. And then the third lesson from this first chapter is that Ruth unselfishly serves even when it's at a great cost. It's not so hard when it doesn't cost us anything, but Ruth illustrated this in her commitment to Naomi in spite of the personal sacrifice that it required. Or in verses 16 and 17, where she uttered those words that we've heard so many times, whether thou goest, I will go. She made this resolution when she lost her husband. And the resolution she made meant that she might have to live in poverty. She knew what Naomi's situation was and what her own situation was. So she knew what was ahead because of the situation. But now also I want to point out to you that it's no secret that the meaning of unselfish commitment has been lost on our me-first generation in which we live. Grown children treat their parents in shabby, selfish ways. Ambitious mothers sacrifice their children's needs for their careers. Divorcing fathers desert their families for another woman and often don't support them. Government has to go after them. And many people excuse their dereliction by saying, well, I've got my life to live. Well, all of us have our lives to live. Everybody does. But it's also true that we have commitments and that we have duties that may require us to sacrifice unselfishly. But our me first generation, I sometimes call it the I, me, mine generation, says me first and is not willing to sacrifice. It's going to cost them very much, even for those that they're the closest to. Ruth is a wonderful real-life example of someone with unselfish devotion and love. She gave up her culture. She gave up her family, her people. She gave up her language because of her love. And so she's a great example for all of us. Now then, let's read the second chapter and remember that hardship and misfortune and poverty are never an excuse for sin. Beginning of chapter 2, and Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, a family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her half was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, Hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels, and drink of that which the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face, and bowed herself to the ground, and said unto him, Why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, It has fully been shown me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother, and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, unto whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, Let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be like unto one of thine handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, At mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up, and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. And her mother-in-law said unto her, Where hast thou gleaned today, and where wroughtest thou? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, The man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, Blessed be he of the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, The man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. And Ruth the Moabitess said, He said unto me also, Thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. Now then, what we learn in this chapter is that when Ruth faced a hardship, and when she faced poverty, she did not resort to immorality or to dishonesty to try to make a living. She did not sell her body, she did not steal, or anything of that kind in order to make a living, even though many people would have justified it if she had. The law permitted the poor to glean in the fields, so Ruth met her need by honest work. And that's what we read here in this chapter. And the fact that Ruth did not stoop to immorality or dishonesty because of her poverty, I believe is clear from a statement that's made in the next chapter, where Boaz says, And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. So this was the reputation she had earned. He said, Everybody in town knows what kind of person you are. And we know that you're a virtuous woman. And so today many people think that right and wrong are relative and situational. And if you get in a hard situation, then it would be okay to do something like that. That hardship is kind of a license to pursue what you want by hook or by crook. But Ruth reminds us that that is never, ever true. Now let's look at the third chapter. And as we read this third chapter, let's notice the story of love and devotion. Let me point out before we read this chapter that I'm sure that you'll think what Ruth did was very strange, and it is to our customs. But what she did was based on Jewish custom and on Jewish law. And it was for the purpose of preserving the posterity of relatives who died without children and therefore without heirs. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, All that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, Who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And he said, Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I am. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until the morning. And she lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also he said, Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee, and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley, and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, Who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, Go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. Then said she, Sit still, my daughter, until thou know the matter how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. So she knew the kind of man Boaz was, and she also knew from what had happened that Boaz was attracted to her. Now, as we think about this, and about the customs of that time, and how the near kinsman was to take the responsibility when one was widowed like this. This is what Jesus was asked about over in the 12th chapter of Mark, when they came and asked him about a woman that whose husband had died, and that happened 7 times, whose wife shall she be in the resurrection? They were referring to this custom of the people, that the nearest of kin would take her. So what Naomi advised to her and what Ruth did wasn't immoral. It was an honorable appeal to Boaz to take her to be his wife, and that's how he understood it, because that was the occasion on which he said, Thou art a virtuous woman. And the fact that Ruth's motives were honorable was clear to Boaz by what he said. And also, Boaz didn't take the initiative himself simply because he was an older man. He was perhaps 20 years older than her. He was not the nearest of kin. There was somebody else that was closer kin than he was. And perhaps he thought she wouldn't want to marry him anyway. So that was why he was reluctant. Now then, let's look at the next chapter, chapter 4. As we read this last chapter, we're going to see another lesson here, a lesson about God that we all need to know. Then went Boaz up to the gate, and set him down there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, Hold such a one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city, and said, Set ye down here, and they sat down. And he said unto the kinsman, Naomi, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is none to redeem it beside thee. And I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, What day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi, thou must buy it also of Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. Now this was the manner in former time in Israel, concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things. A man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe. And Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's, and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead unto his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. And let thy house be like the house of Phares, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the woman said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, and a nourisher of thine old age, for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him. And Naomi took the child, and laid it in her bosom, and became nurse unto it. And the women, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Phares. Phares begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram, and Ram begat Amminadab. And Amminadab begat Nahshon, and Nahshon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed. And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. Now then, the lesson about God this whole book teaches simply is this, that God cares. And we see that in this chapter. And I believe to appreciate this lesson, you've got to remember what time in history this was, that all this happened during the dark and turbulent days of the judges. We read that in the first verse. And the period of judges, you remember, was a time of spiritual apostasy and oppression and war and immorality. And Ruth stands in contrast as an oasis of integrity and righteousness in those dark and turbulent days of immorality. And it was a time when Gideon and Samson and others did their exploits. A time that we've read about. It was a time when Israel was being overrun by her enemies and then liberated and then overrun and liberated and then overrun and liberated. It happened about seven times, I believe. So in the midst of the turbulent times of war and strife, defeat and victory, the little book of Ruth is a story about unimportant people doing unimportant things. That's what it's about. Now, if any history book written about that time, any other book that was written about those times, the death of an obscure man and his sons wouldn't even write a footnote. Because what do historians usually write about? Well, they write about kings and nations and what's going on in high society. This book is about unimportant people, nobodies, so far as historians would be concerned. But God caused Ruth's story to be recorded and preserved, and that shows that God sees what history ignores and that no one is unimportant to God. That's what we learn from the book of Ruth. And that's an important thing for us to know, because probably none of us will ever do anything the world will remember. I don't expect my name to ever be in the history books, unless I write it in there myself. One of my own copies. And we live unnoticed lives, and few will know or care when we die. But no one is unimportant to God. The New Testament says, even the very hairs of your head are numbered. And the Lord's had a hard time keeping up with mine, but it's getting easier for him. And it says, cast all your cares upon him, for he careth for you, over in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. So the little book of Ruth is a story that serves to remind us that God sees and knows and cares about what's happening to us, even unimportant people like us. Now, I want us to just briefly review some things here about the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth reveals a whole lot about the customs of the times. The book of Ruth tells more about the customs of ancient Palestine than almost any other Old Testament book. It tells us about famine and about communication between Israel and her neighbors, about the growing of grain and harvest time. It gives details of reaping and the gleaning of grain from the threshing floor, and also the grain left for the poor that was part of the law. It tells about the responsibilities and the privileges of the nearest kinsman. It's interesting to point out that the word translated kinsman, Gaal, G-A-A-L, means redeemer. It means redeemer, and that's what he did. In this case, it passed on to Boaz, who was the next in line, the next kin willing, and gave him the right to marry Ruth. And much of our insight into the customs of ancient Israel come from this little short book. If you've got any books in your library about the manners and customs of the Bible, a lot of it will come from the book of Ruth. And so it's very valuable from that standpoint. But another thing, it helps us to understand family life in ancient Israel. We see how a father took his family into a foreign country and how his sons intermarried with the daughters of that land, and we see tragedy strike and leave Naomi without husband or sons in a strange land. And when Naomi turns again homeward to Bethlehem, bereft of all that she brought to Moaz, Ruth refuses to forsake her. And in her determination to stay with Naomi, Ruth spoke those immortal words which have echoed across the centuries at marriage altars, although they weren't said about a husband and wife, they were said about a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law, whether thou goest, I will go, and whether thou lodgest, I will lodge, and so forth. Such an insight into the ordinary life of an ordinary family of that ancient day is a priceless gift. But then another thing, what we find here is an incomparable love story. With tenderness and beauty, the author tells us of the faithfulness of a foreign daughter-in-law to her widowed mother-in-law. And with the loss of her own husband, Ruth has no ties to Naomi anymore. She's not blood kin to her. She's not tied to her by marriage or inheritance to bind her to Naomi. There's nothing there to bind her to her. And yet with a steadfast love that was as strong and moving as we've just read about, she clings to her and she helps to support her. And such love is rewarded in the most dramatic way. And it's often very rare. And it's her very faithfulness in working at the task of gleaning in order to keep Naomi from and herself from starving, which brings her to the attention of Boaz. So you can kind of see God's providence working in here, working along the lines of their choices. And this most eligible of bachelors was attracted by her apparently because of her beauty of character, as well as her natural beauty. He was able to see beyond the outward appearance. And the persistence with which Boaz sought out the nearest of kin in order to gain the right to marry Ruth discloses not only some interesting marriage customs, which I said you would find it strange, but also it records the depth of his love for Ruth. And this is one of the greatest love stories of all ages. But I believe that the greatest theological message lies in its powerful portrayal of the sovereign purpose of God working out through all of this, working out through all the joys and the tragedies of life, the famine, the death, the loneliness, and all of that, voluntary exile and the unshakable fidelity, all of that combines to fulfill the sure purpose of God. Nothing is able to block the achievements of the divine will. So here we see the providence of God. This is the deepest message, I believe, of Ruth. Even the faithfulness of Ruth and the humble task of gleaning was used in God's purpose to bring Ruth and Boaz together and to bring the child, Obed, and eventually to bring his son, David, and then David's greater son 1,000 years later. So you see how this fits into history and the importance of it. Now then, as we conclude our study of this little Bible book, I want you to realize that it's not too late for us to develop the qualities that will make us more like the people we've read about, more like the faithful men and women of the Bible. And that's what our purpose in coming together on a regular basis is, to help us be better people. It's not too late for older women to become more like Naomi, who was worthy of her daughter-in-law's devotion and love. There must have been something about Naomi that would cause Ruth to be so devoted to her. So older women can achieve that. They can be the kind of in-laws and the kind of parents to others that they ought to be. Also, let me point out that it's not too late for younger women to become more like Ruth, who was loved and respected for her integrity and her devotion. And I've wondered just how much Ruth's behavior helped Naomi's faith. Remember, Naomi was having a problem with her faith. She said, God has dealt harshly with me and all that. But look at what Ruth did for her. And I believe that Ruth helped Naomi's faith by the way she did. So younger women can also be an example to the older. It works both ways. And also, it's not too late for Christian men to become more like Boaz, who was an example of dignity and kindness and understanding. And if we do become like these faithful men and women in the Bible, it may be that God will use us in ways that we've never imagined. I doubt that they realized how important they were going to be. Remember the statement that was made there in chapter 3, "Be thou famous in Israel." He was, wasn't he? He probably didn't understand that. "Be thou famous in Israel," that's what was said to Boaz, and he certainly is. Many people in every generation have read about him. And so remember also that Jesus, the son of David, who was also the son of Boaz and Ruth, they never dreamed that they were becoming a part of God's plan to bring the Christ into the world. But they were involved in it. They were a very important part of that. And in other ways, it's still possible for unimportant people like us to be used by God in ways that would be impossible for us to calculate. We need to believe that. We need to realize that. And so, to make that possible, we must do what Boaz and Ruth and Naomi did. That is, we must live faithful lives no matter what experiences and circumstances we may have to face. About two summers ago, there was a sleeper movie that made the rounds. I called it a sleeper because it was far more successful than it was ever expected to be. And because of its name, it was called Sleepless in Seattle. Some of you may have seen it. It was a story about love. It was a romance story, and it was I believe it was at a time when our nation was hungry for a pure, wholesome, innocent romance. And people flocked to the theaters in droves. And it was one of the biggest box office hits. But I want to point out to you that this story that we've read tonight far surpasses it. First of all, because it's true. It really happened in time and in history at a particular place. Also because it's pure and wholesome. And also because it teaches many great lessons to us today. But most of all, out of it, we get our Savior. And that's what makes the book of Ruth so special. That's why in the beginning we called it a jewel, sandwiched right in there between the book of Judges and 1 Samuel. But it's still a priceless book. We ought to appreciate it. I thank you for attention tonight, your attention, and I believe that it's possible that someone may be here who needs to obey the gospel of Christ. We never want to close a service without the opportunity for you to become a Christian, a child of God, nothing more, nothing less, and nothing else. And you can become a person like those that we've studied about tonight. They were people, they had flesh and blood just like you and me, subject to all the same things you and I are subject to. But they were able to overcome their circumstances. Whatever situation you may find yourself, you can overcome. If you'll renounce your sinful past, all of us have one, and say, I want to live for Jesus Christ, I want to be saved, I want to be a Christian. And if you'll follow him through the watery grave of baptism and be raised to walk a new life, you can be just that. If you're a child of God and there's sin in your life and it may be something that may need to be acknowledged in a public way, we plead with you likewise to come while we stand and sing the hymn that's been selected.